ready.
Okay. All right. Well, I think that, Ottertail, do you have everyone you need?
Yes, we do.
Okay. Well, we'll go ahead and proceed then. So it's 1:35 on November 30th. We are on the 12th floor of the state capitol for an informal hearing on case number PU-16-625. I'll call this hearing to order. Here at the commission, we have myself, Julie Fedorchak. I'm currently chair of the commission, and my colleagues, Randy Crispin and Brian Kalk. I do not have any opening comments, but I'll see if my fellow colleagues do. Randy?
I do not.
No, just an administrative note. It's PU-16-624 by 625.
Oh, sorry.
And then I don't have anything. I don't know if we want to turn it to Ottertail, and then I know staff's got a memo, but I think it's okay with you. I have nothing further.
Sure. All right. So we in our room, we've got Jerry Lean and Sarah Cardwell at the table, and then also Pat Fawn and Daryl Nitschke and Steve Call helping to keep things rolling. So, Sarah, did you want to go straight to the company?
Yes. Just one. The first thing that I'm going to say, though, is I'll switch the slides here, so you guys just need to tell me when to switch.
All right. Okay, so then we'll turn it over to the company. Bryce, are you going to start things off?
Yes, I will. Thank you, Commissioner. Yes, we'll start the Transmission Cost Recovery Rider, PU-16-624. Thank you for... we appreciate the chance to talk through the rider here today. If you'd move to slide 2, we have a list of the agenda, the items that we'll cover today. In talking with Sarah through this, we thought that these would be appropriate items to discuss. So we'll give a background of the information, kind of what's provided in the rider, the history of it, what goes into an annual update. We'll provide a summary of existing projects. We'll provide an update on the Southwest Power Pool expenses, as well as a description of the 3 new projects that we've requested for inclusion. And Mr. Stephenson will provide an update on the MISO return on equity complaints, and then we will summarize the request that we've put together in the application for this year's update. On slide 3, it shows just the history of the transmission rider, when it first became effective, and then how the annual updates have come through. This is a rider that we submit by September 1 each year, and as you can see on the effective dates, we've been having the rates be implemented January 1. And it's a calendar year recovery period for this rider. On slide 4, here's a little bit of background of what happens on an annual update. We replace forecast information with actual data as for the current recovery period, and then also update the forecasted information for the proposed recovery period. Another item that we include in an annual update is a description of the new projects that we're requesting recovery of, and why those are the reliability projects, why they benefit the system, and then we also incorporate other unique items into the application each year.
Hey Bryce, Brian here. Just a quick question from the last slide. Was 2012 the first time we approved the transmission rider?
Well, the transmission rider was initially filed and got rolled into the rate case. And so it became effective then, but the first update happened in 2012. So the first rates were in May of 2012, that's correct.
But what did we do? I remember the rate case, I think. I thought these riders had been around since MISO started. I guess I'm wrong on that. How did you track these costs before that? Were they always in general rate cases?
Chair Fedorchuk, Commissioner Call, because of P5. They were previously in general rate cases. We didn't have these kind of costs. Most of these projects started about in 2011 to start to incur costs. So you wouldn't have seen much prior to that.
Okay, is that just you guys hit a build-out period in that time? I know it's not so much involved in this case, but that kind of caught me off guard a little bit. I just didn't realize that that's the way it rolled out. But was it big build-out that you guys started in, or is there some driver that changed it at that time frame?
Commissioner Culp, this is Jason Weyers from Otter Tail. I think if you look at the evolution of MISO and the associated transmission costs and the corresponding planning studies that are done each year, cost allocation really didn't start until 2005, and it was slow to ramp up, and in fact, I think the CapEx projects were really some of the very first large-scale cost-shared reliability projects in MISO, and I believe those were approved in 2008 and then construction pursued after that. So the large uptick in construction costs for new transmission projects probably didn't start to really occur in earnest until 2010, 2011.
Okay, so that makes sense. So prior to that, it was something you guys were the drivers on, and it was all your stuff, and then you roll it into there, get your PCNs and whatever. So, okay, thanks, Jason.
So if there are no questions, we'd move on to slide number 5. And the expansion and investment in these transmission projects, the projects need to be justified in least cost. And we do the projects to maintain system reliability, to increase the market efficiency, and then to support the current and future regional generation resource development. So we move on to slide 6. We have a map of the blue stars show the projects that are already in the rider and have been previously approved. And then the three red stars show the three projects that we're proposing for inclusion in this year's annual update. And the numbers on this slide, slide 6 with the stars, correlate to slide 7, which I'll go to now. And slide 7 lists the projects. The total investment required to do the projects, and then what the 2017 revenue requirement is in Otter Tail's transmission rider.
Hey, Bryce Brannigan, update me. I know we just did some PCN for all of you. Was that the rugby ones, or all these 15, 16, and 17? Have we issued PCNNs on those, or which ones haven't we or not required? Or just remind me where we're at with those.
The line number 16 is the Rugby breaker station and line upgrades. That one we had a CPCN. That would have been...
wasn't that long ago. I remember that.
Yeah, it's in PU-16-625.
And then what about 15 and 17?
Commissioner Culp, this is Kerry Stephenson. No, we didn't submit CPCNs for those. There were no line extensions associated with those breaker stations. For the Granville breaker station, and in reviewing the prior CPCNs that have been filed with breaker stations, there usually was some form of line extension associated with those.
Okay. So to answer your question, 16 did require a CPCN. Line 15, the Max to Rider, was an existing facility change, and then line 17 similar.
Do those help reduce your SPP issues at all, 15 and 17, or are those just other things you'd need?
Commissioner Call, Jason Weyers here. Specifically around projects number 16 and 17, these projects offer reliability benefits to the system, and as a secondary benefit, we believe they will have the ability to reduce SPP expenses to some extent.
Thank you.
Can you provide, this is Julie, a little bit more information on number 12?
Yes, the NERC compliance facility ratings projects, believe that we included those in the 2013 update, or the 2014 update, perhaps. Those projects are complete at this point, and so they are fully in service, and we have met our compliance obligation with those facility rating upgrades.
What were they? What does that mean? NERC compliance facility ratings upgrade.
Commissioner Fedorchuk, Jason Weyers here again. NERC had issued a mandate in the 2012-2013 timeframe, which required utilities to go out and verify that the physical lines were constructed as they were actually designed. So as a result of this mandate, Otter Tail and several other utilities across the nation has gone out and done detailed surveys of each facility to ensure that these lines can carry the amount of power that were stated through the design of each facility. And because of the physical, there's a mismatch between the physical construction of these facilities versus the actual design parameters, so there was a fairly extensive amount of upgrades that was completed by Otter Tail across its entire system in order to achieve facility ratings that were acceptable and did not jeopardize reliability to the transmission system.
What was behind FERC driving that, and is there something in place now to make that happen on an ongoing basis versus sort of as a special project?
The Northeast blackout that occurred, I believe it was August 14th of 2013, is really what caused this mandate to come out by NERC. If you may recall the sequence of events that led to that Northeast blackout, there was some extensive flows on facilities which caused them to heat up and sag into some trees, which caused additional tripping of facilities and subsequent overloads on the system. Again, I think it pointed to a deficiency in this northeast area where the line clearances between the conductors and any other material within the right-of-way just wasn't sufficient. And as a result, one of the outcomes from the blackout was that we go out and we look at the facilities and confirm that they can physically carry the amount of flow that we expect them to. So as a result of the work that Otter Tail had performed, we went out, did the survey work, and in many situations we did end up raising conductors further from the ground to add additional clearance so that as these conductors do load up to carry the amount of flow that's required of them, we don't have any issues with clearance between the conductors and anything within the right-of-way.
And had those things like slipped over time, or why were they not constructed that way to begin with the proper clearance to carry the amount of power they were designed to carry?
You're asking a very good question that dates back to before I started here at Otter Tail. I think just over time there's been a change in the design parameters and through the course of time, maybe there just hasn't been a good translation of those records from the generations who've been working here since they were constructed back in the 50s and 60s.
I guess what I'm getting at is that was a $16 million price tag caused by NERC. Because they found, because there was these blackouts that triggered it. And so how are we as regulators to be able to take the company's word that what you say you're designing something to is actually what you're going to design it to, and it's going to function that way in the future without an agency like NERC coming back and requiring this stuff after the fact? Do you get where I'm going with this?
Yes, yes. In terms of the NERC reliability standards, they became enforceable in the 2005 timeframe when penalties could actually be assessed
on utilities for not doing exactly what they say they were doing. And I would say over time there's been a very large increase in oversight by NERC and the reliability regions in which we operate to ensure that issues don't come up like we've seen in the Northeast area back in that 2013 timeframe. At this point in time, I can confidently say that there's several rigorous steps here within Otter Tail that ensures that whatever is designed on paper is physically what is constructed out in the field, and we have a compliance obligation to make sure that that is accurate.
Okay, thank you.
One more question on that line of questioning. You mentioned some projects from the 50s and 60s, and so there's just not really a trail to get to the bottom of where things went wrong. Yeah. Does that mean that all of these fixes were done on projects from that kind of a time frame, or is that just an example, but there were also some from maybe the 80s or 90s or even newer that also weren't built up to proper standards?
I don't have the specific details on which facilities required the most attention, but I would venture to guess the older facilities certainly needed more attention than the newer facilities.
Then, go ahead, Brian.
I was just going to throw out there, Jace, I this completely off the top of my head, but I know that GRE has been in here for a couple updates because of NERC standards, because of the water bodies in 2016 look a lot different than the water bodies did in 1980, and so they've had a lot of their changes based on NERC standards that the water is higher now. So I don't know, you guys maybe had some of that stuff in there too.
Yes, that's a very good reminder, Commissioner Kalk. That's very true with our system as well. And then over time, as additional facilities have been built, whether it's by other utilities or cooperatives in the area, line crossings that happen underneath our facilities after they're initially constructed also require scrutiny to make sure we maintain that appropriate clearance between the high voltage conductor and anything that may be below them.
Then one other quick question, well, might not be so quick, but excuse me, it's a more high level general question. You summarize on one of these slides the three drivers of the cost, just general drivers, but they're so general, I'm looking for a little bit more detail. Are these things that, you know, if you're saying this is like the system needs to be refreshed, this is old stuff that needs to be replaced is driving it, it's the need to provide more transmission to incorporate wind on the grid. It's new technology that's better than old. Can you give me a little bit more information about the drivers? It's a little more detailed than system reliability and increased market efficiency. Those, you know, just more common language.
Chair Fedorchuk, Jason Weyers here again. I'll just maybe give a couple examples for each of these bullets that appear on this slide five. When we talk about maintaining system reliability, really that's referring to projects that are driven by age and condition of existing facilities or potentially addressing a need on the systems that is stemming from load growth or new customers.
Good. What about the...
Yep, sure. Increasing market efficiency is really looking more at the energy market and trying to lower the overall delivered cost of energy to customers, and in our case, it'd be throughout the MISO footprint or in a specific region where we may have low-cost generation bottled up due to transmission constraints that just can't get out to the customer base.
And remind me again, if that's, say you're trying to bring, that seems to be a lot of what would be considered wind projects, which are, we're often told, lower or the lowest cost, and yet there's no transmission to bring them on. So I'm assuming the total cost, though, of the wind when it's brought on, is considered including the cost of the new increased transmission, correct?
I'll apologize, Commissioner Fedorchuk. The background information I have is really around transmission. I'm not as familiar with total costs when it comes to generation costs plus transmission costs. I'm more focused on the transmission aspect of it, which obviously we're always looking for that least cost option that meets the needs of the system.
So that's a question that is pretty important, I think, to consider overall, and I'm sure that someone in your company knows that, so maybe they can get back after the hearing with that information. But overall, obviously, the customers care about the total cost. They're paying for the transmission and the generation. So if we're telling them that we're bringing on low-cost generation, it should be also factoring in the cost of the new transmission required to bring it on, that they'll also be paying for it. So net both of those, they should be lower cost than what they would be paying to, say, run the coal plants longer or the natural gas generation.
Yes, Commissioner Fedorchuk, this is Bryce Haugen, and yes, I think probably Brian Draxton in resource planning maybe would be able to respond more appropriately to that question, and we could follow up with him on that to provide that information.
That's good, just so that we aren't just looking at things in separate buckets and we're drawing the connections between them to make sure that the overall costs are, you know, going in the right direction for customers.
And then just continuing on slide 5, Commissioner Fedorchuk, the last bullet here talks about supporting current and future regional generation resource development. And as we're all aware, there's been a lot of national press about the changing generation mix within the nation and the buzz around the Clean Power Plan. Now, as we look at future transmission development, we're always searching for that no-regrets transmission plan that's really going to work with any future generation development scenario, whether it's the continuation of the existing generation fleet that continues forward, whether it's the integration of additional wind, additional solar, is there going to be some sort of future carbon tax? We're looking at these types of scenarios through the MISO planning process, and we're always searching for that no-regrets transmission plan.
So you're meaning that you're developing transmission to support a grid that will be able to accommodate whatever generation is available or developed.
Exactly correct.
That's challenging when you're driving, when your generation has to lead right to it, when your transmission has to lead right to a generation source. You know, and say that's a wind farm out in Tioga. There's no other generation around there. How do you do no regrets for that?
Yeah, you know, I think it's kind of an analogy that may go with a kind of a spoke and hub analogy, where you think about all these lower voltage lines that go out and collect the generation, and then they come to a central hub where they are collected and then transmitted over longer distances to get to the customer, you know, the population centers. So really, as we think about this least regrets transmission plan, we're looking for that high voltage backbone transmission project that can collect the generation from various locations and then get that energy to where it needs to get to.
Got it. Okay, thank you for that.
You know, Jason, I'll just add, I agree with 100% what Julie's saying. I think the challenge is going to be the cost allocation to make sure nobody screws with that as we get the projects that come out of MISO and how they get allocated costs to make sure that people don't shift stuff to you guys that they've tried to over the years that you and Stacy and Joanna have fought very well. That's going to continue to be the fight, I think, on this issue.
And we're monitoring that very closely, Commissioner Kalk.
Yeah, through the MISO-RECB task force. So that is something we're keeping very close tabs on and making sure that the beneficiaries are the ones that are being assigned the costs. I mean, that's a bottom-line goal of ours as any new policy or proposal is entertained.
What was the name of the task force?
RECB, Regional Economic and Criteria Benefits Task Force.
Jason, isn't that they do that sneaky little formula that always comes out to one no matter what the numbers they put in are?
There has been some questions about the black box. Yeah, the black box analogy.
Fair enough. That was just my setup question.
All right.
If we're ready to move on, I think slide 8 was next, and I'll, this is Jason here again, I'll be covering the next series of slides. Wanted to give an overview of an update on SPP expenses and then an overview of the new projects and future projects that we may be entertaining through future filings in our transmission rider. Specifically on slide 8, a quick update on Southwest Power Pool expenses. Settlement discussions are ongoing in the Central Power Integration Docket. We've had two meetings in the last 2 months. We have two more meetings scheduled in the upcoming 2 months. At the current time, parties are exchanging drafts of settlement principles, and Otter Tail is continuing to work hard on finding a resolution in this docket to minimize the costs for Otter Tail customers. You'll notice here that our 2016 charges are coming in lower than we originally forecasted, and I would attribute that to two different factors, one of which is the basis for the estimates in our 2015 filing. We were using information from SPP that was very preliminary. Even, in fact, it was before the WAPA Basin integration happened on October 1st of 2015. So now that we've been getting actual invoices dating back to January 1st of 2016, we actually have more concrete information to use as we update our forecasts. So that's been one reason for the variance in the two forecasts, the one we supplied before this year and then now this one that we're supplying essentially mid-year.
So, Jason, I don't even remember what time you and I were out there with the FERC, and there was that question that you hadn't gotten any bills. So these are, you've gotten all the bills that are current from SPP, and you're happy with what, well, you understand what it is they've asked you for, and that's no longer disagreement than the billing? Or is that still an issue, what they've charged you?
The billings that we've received, we are up to date on the billings. We have a good handle on the information included on the monthly invoices. We still do not believe it's fair that we're basically being charged for SPP and MISO rates for transmission service to our customers. And through the course of our ongoing settlement discussions, we hope to find some relief for our customers. But generally speaking, Commissioner Kalk, the invoices are up to date, and we do understand what's on each of those invoices.
So as this plays out, understanding we're broadcasting to the whole world here, then we'll true up these costs at some amount, and depending how the settlement goes, it could adjust going forward. Would it ever, do you think, adjust going backwards, or once these costs are, once we pay the bill, then that kind of is a sunk cost no matter what the settlement agreement goes forward, or is that all subject to the settlement agreement, I suppose?
Actually, Commissioner Kalk, the FERC order in this docket did require refunds back to January 1st, 2016, which was the integration date of Central Power into SPP. So to the extent that we find a settlement that results in a lower cost for Otter Tail, we should be privileged to retroactive refunds dating back to January 1st, 2016.
Any idea what broke them from finally providing this information?
Can you repeat that, please?
Any idea why they finally decided to give this information up and you'd been asking for it for a long time?
You're talking about the lag in the invoices for Otter Tail? You know, I think some of those early year hiccups were really attributed to Otter Tail being a new customer in SPP and getting all the appropriate channels established so that we were exchanging the right data and then finally getting the right data. Because I think the first couple months we are working on some corrections to some of the load data that was submitted, and eventually I think it was about in the May time frame we finally started receiving invoices, and currently now we're up to speed.
Okay, thank you. That's good. That's good to hear.
I do want to just make one note on slide 8 before we leave. You'll notice the updated estimates for 2016 are now showing a credit that will be passed through the rider to our customers in North Dakota. I want to just point out that this credit is likely a short-term situation that's stemming from the timing of other pieces that are in play. We expect this will likely be an expense in 2017, and I believe our forecasts have shown that in 2017, our current estimate is that our North Dakota share of STP costs would be about $400,000 of an expense, not a credit.
So, Jason, did you just say that looking forward, your costs are going to be about $400K a year if nothing changes?
The current forecast we've provided is showing a $400,000 cost for our North Dakota customers. At this point, Jerry, I'm reluctant to say that'll be the cost going forward until we reach settlement in this particular proceeding.
Yeah, thanks.
But that's a difference of just, I know it's a lot of numbers moving around, but at one time there was a $2 million a year, now we're in that $400,000 range is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, and I guess I want to be careful that we're comparing apples to apples in terms of total system cost versus
okay.
North Dakota.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
When's the next big powwow on this deal with the FERC stuff and this SPP thing? Is there a date that we should be putting on our calendar to get out there or at least be listening in or something?
I believe a conference call is being scheduled for December 12th.
All right, thanks, Chase.
Slide 9, we'll move into slide 9, which is getting into the new transmission projects that we're proposing for inclusion in our 2017 transmission rider. The first one on slide 9 is a project between MACS and Rider where Otter Tail is performing some upgrades on a 41.6 kV transmission line. As you look at the map, you'll notice that this particular line is on the extreme western edge of our service territory, and records are showing that this line is approaching 60 years old. It's roughly 60 miles in length and serves 7 Otter Tail communities, including the cities of Parshall, Plaza, Wabik, Makoti, Ryder, Douglas, and Max. And when we look at the performance of this line, we've noticed an increasing amount of service interruptions due to failing equipment out here, and most of these have been momentary interruptions that we've been trying to address by replacing poles, crossarms, insulators, and conductor where necessary. We are performing these upgrades on the basis of a multi-year plan where we're going to rebuild certain portions each year to address the reliability concerns that have been identified. We've targeted some of the worst areas and started on those back in 2015, and we're going to plan to continue that work going forward. We'll have some pieces done in 2016, 2017, and I think the final piece will be in 2018.
Jason, if you made that line, wasn't one of the stinks between SPP was they don't count the 41.6s? Could you make, I mean, would it be worthwhile to consider making this, what's the next step up, a 69 kV line? I mean, it's going to keep growing. I mean, how does your planning process look at that, and wouldn't that be a better long-term solution? I know it's going to cost more, but it seems like that's where it's going to end up at.
Yeah, very good point, Commissioner Kalk. In fact, our new 41.6 kV construction is at 69 kV standards. So the line itself, after the upgrades are completed, would be capable of achieving a higher voltage operating voltage of 69 kV. Obviously, the additional piece in the future would be converting any of these substations to that higher voltage when and if we make that switch.
But if you do that, doesn't that take the question away from SPP's argument?
Yes, we have found through our discussions with SPP that 60 kV has been what I would call their bright line for the definition of transmission. And yes, by upgrading this line to 69 kV, it seems like we would certainly overcome one of the hurdles to including these facilities in SPP.
I guess my thought would be do it, but that's just my thought. So you guys will have to do your planning, but I think that would be a big help down the road.
Yep, thank you. Slide 10 is the second project that is being proposed for inclusion in the 2017 transmission rider. This is the Rugby breaker station and line upgrades. We did talk about this previously as it was included in a prior docket in front of the commission. We filed a CPCN and was granted that CPCN on November 2nd. This project really addresses some reliability concerns in the Rugby area. This will enhance the system in that area by connecting these 41-6 lines directly to a strong 230 kV source in the area. Previously, they had been connected to a 115 system there. Additionally, there's been an outage of Central Power's 115 41-6 kV transformer at Rugby, which is further driving a need to do some work in that Rugby area to reinforce the system, and the 230 kV connection is certainly the most economic and most beneficial for the customers in this area. There's some distribution work that's happening as part of this project. Those costs are not included in the TCR, but they certainly have benefits to the local customers in that Rugby area as well. As you look back at the transmission and distribution parts of this project, really there's going to be enhancements to both the 41.6 kV transmission as well as the distribution system as well. The project's expected to be done in December of 2016 with a total cost of around $2 million. Slide 11 is the last new project being proposed for inclusion in the 2017 transmission rider. Otter Tail is constructing a new 41.6 kV breaker station near Granville, North Dakota. This will include the installation of three new 41.6 kV circuit breakers. The project will address reliability concerns in the area by reducing exposure for customers, enhancing reliability by connecting multiple sources into this specific load area, and improving restoration times when it comes to switching of certain facilities to restore power. All of these benefits are going to lead to less downtime for customers. The total estimated cost for the project is at $1.1 million, and again, slated for completion at the end of this year. If there's no questions, we can move on to slide 12.
Well, I'll throw one out. These projects, are they in any order? Are they in the order of your highest to lowest priority, or are they all equal, or what?
They're all essentially progressing on a similar time frame. We have multiple line crews that are available to help on these particular projects, and I would say they're all of an equal priority that are all expected to be done, or at least in some by the end of this year.
They're all on schedule to be done, did you say?
Correct.
Okay, thanks.
Moving to slide 12, we wanted to highlight a couple potential future projects that are on the drawing board for Otter Tail. I want to reemphasize that these are not included in our transmission rider for 2017, but they are larger scale projects that are currently being considered by Otter Tail. And in fact, as you look at the geographic area that is encompassed by these three particular projects, we are closely coordinating with Mentora Power Cooperative, since they also serve load in these areas.
Jason, can you just refresh my memory again how, You talked about how you're working with Minn Kota for some potential shared value, but when does this threshold kick into the MISO planning process, or is that already somewhere included in what you told me? I can never keep it straight with the lines of demarcation, if you will, of when it spends more time in MISO and when it's just you guys and how that all correlates.
Generally, through the MISO planning process, we have what we call a top-down approach and a bottoms-up approach. The bottoms-up approach is really the local studies that are being performed by the utilities, and in this case, Otter Tail and Minn Kota are performing joint studies looking for least-cost transmission plans to support the system in these areas. At the same time we propose these projects to MISO, they also perform a top-down analysis of the overall MISO network to ensure that there's no harm identified in their studies to the rest of the transmission system. So through the collaboration of MISO and the local utilities, we ensure that the transmission plans being developed are robust and do not cause any reliability concerns.
So when does it trigger to where there's a cost share all the way inside of MISO? How do you, I mean, a 230 kV line, that seems like it might be big enough for a cost share well outside of just you guys.
The cost-sharing rules have changed in light of Order 1000. As you look at these three projects, they're all what we would consider baseline reliability projects. They were previously cost-shared in MISO to some extent prior to FERC Order 1000, but in light of FERC Order 1000 and the introduction of competition for transmission projects that are cost-shared, MISO tariff has been modified so that these baseline reliability projects are no longer cost-shared across MISO. So what it comes down to in this situation is really looking at an equitable resolution between the parties who benefit the most in these areas, and in this case, Otter Tail and Minn Kota are engaged in discussions to figure out what we believe would be a equitable cost-sharing arrangement for these projects.
Thank you.
The first project that's listed here is a new 230 line between Winger and Thief River Falls. As Commissioner Kalk pointed out, this particular line is 230 kV, which is of a higher voltage when you consider the network in this area. It's estimated to be about 60 miles long and roughly $60 million in total cost. Otter Tail's portion is currently estimated to be about $30 million, and the expected in-service date at this time is looking to be around that 2024 time frame. The second project identified is a Clearbrook Area 115 kV line. This is over on the eastern edge of Otter Tail service territory. This line is estimated to be roughly 20 miles long, 115 kV, and it will address reliability concerns that are growing between Winger and Bemidji. In this case, Otter Tail's investments expect to be about $13 million. Total project costs is in the neighborhood of $15 million. The last project identified here is in northeast North Dakota, between a new 115 kV line between Hensel and Drayton. This particular line is estimated to be about 25 miles in length, and it will address some reliability concerns in the area between Hensel, North Dakota, and Langdon, North Dakota. Our investment in this project is estimated at $4 million, with a total cost of roughly $15 million.
So, Jason, the running out of time, I'll take all the time, but the a little bit of the what-if game, you know, the part of the challenges with SPP is this shared build-out over the years with Central Power. Should we be careful with the shared build-out you're doing with Minn Kota? Who knows where they might end up down the road if they end up with Basin or somewhere else. If that happens, what happens to these kind of projects? Or is that something that you guys have thought about?
Yes, Commissioner Kalk, that is something that's front and center in front of Otter Tail at this point. And we are very open to trying to find solutions that will position us in a favorable state going forward. One concept that we would like to explore with Minn Kota on these projects is what we would call joint tenants in common ownership, so that we have ownership share in the entire project rather than just the discrete piece. If we go with that arrangement, which we've already used in the CapEx initiative, we would maintain an electrical path between our generation and our load without any reliance on a discrete chunk of wire that may be owned by Minn Kota.
Okay, thank you. Good thinking.
Chair Fedorchak and Commissioners, this is Kerry Stephenson, and I'll give a very brief update on the MISO ROE complaints. There are two complaints. The first complaint was filed by industrial customers in November of 2013, seeking to lower the ROE component of the MISO tariff collected by transmission owners. And there was an ALJ decision on that last year in December, which was adopted by FERC in September of this year, and that lowered the return on equity from 12.38% to 10.32%, plus any adders, and Otter Tail has a 50 basis point adder. And the FERC order was effective on September 28th, 2016, and OTP has filed its 2017 forward-looking attachments with MISO at the new ROE that was done on October 20th, 2016. And the impact going forward is that the amount of Schedule 26 and 26A revenue and expenses passed back in the rider will be reduced. And there's a refund obligation with this complaint using the reduced ROE for a refund period of November 12, 2013 through February 11 of 2015. And really two parts to that process, changing the ROE and a subsequent true-up. And the effect of the refund is that revenues received will be refunded to MISO and expenses overpaid will be returned to transmission owners, and we're not sure exactly how that process is going to work, whether there will be some kind of offset or how exactly that will play out. As far as the refund timing, FERC granted MISO an extension to complete the process to June 28th of 2017. The second complaint was filed February 12, 2015, again seeking to reduce the ROE component of the MISO tariff collected by transmission owners, and an ALJ came out with a decision in June of this year recommending an ROE of 9.7%. That's non-binding, and FERC will review and make a final decision, and we're anticipating that in the spring of 2017. And that particular docket would cover a refund period of February 12, 2015 through May 11th of 2016. And in our annual report, we did list that we have recorded a liability on our balance sheet, and we have been accruing and tracking this internally, so we should be prepared for any refund obligations that arise.
This is, Commissioners, this is Bryce Haugen again. Slide 14 provides a revenue requirement summary. The first column is the 2016 revenue requirement that was approved last year. The second column shows the current 2016 estimates, and then the third is what we have included in our application this year for 2017. A couple items that I just want like to point out. In line one, you'll see that our project revenue requirement was lower than what we had projected. The cause of that is primarily bonus depreciation that was passed towards the end of 2015, which had approximately $800,000 decrease to the revenue requirement, and you may recall that this reduction had kind of been discussed throughout the year here in different dockets, but here's a case where the bonus depreciation shows a revenue requirement reduction. In line two, the MISO revenues from Otter Tail investment, you'll see that there's a about a $600,000 amount there. That was just due to some forecasting. We had attempted to see what might happen with this ROE complaint, and it wasn't decided yet, so it didn't come through that way, and that's why there is we were off on that one. Line three, again, you see MISO and SPP expenses. The difference there, we've kind of covered in the SPP forecasting that Mr. Wires has discussed. What we have in the 2017 proposed is a $6.9 million revenue requirement for the 2017 calendar year. And this includes, we've got an over-collected amount that will be spread over 2017 and 2018 for our supplemental filing that was made September 14th after discussions with Ms. Cardwell and Commissioner Kulk's guidance there. Any questions on that slide? Then on slide 15, just to summarize our request, we're requesting the approval of our application for 2017 revenue requirements. That includes the update of costs and collections associated with the projects previously approved and the addition of the three new projects discussed today, as well as incorporating any changes since the supplemental filing that was made into the 2017 annual filing and implementing those rates effective January 1, 2017. Thank you. That's what we have.
Bryce Bryan here again. The only thing I'm tracking that's still out there is Commissioner Fedorchuk had a question. I want to make sure that you know exactly what you need to answer a question. You can get that back pretty quick because I'm hopeful of maybe a vote in this thing for our December 14th meeting. Do you have any questions? What do you need to, do you guys want to talk through that, or do you got a good understanding of what you guys need?
Sure. Commissioner Kulk, my understanding is we'll be visiting with Mr. Draxton in our resource planning area. We wanted to look at what overall costs are going in the right direction for customers and that we're assessing total cost of project for generation, if I understood that correctly from Commissioner Fedorchuk.
Okay, so as soon as you can get that back to Sarah, then Sarah, I think probably staff it to the commissioners, and then if we want a work session, we can have it. Otherwise, we can just move forward with something. And, Sarah, did you have anything you wanted to offer for this informal?
No, I think it all looks good. Thank you, Ottertail, for your presentation.
I have a question for Sarah.
Yes.
Sarah, in your memo to us, you talk about the D2 factor.
Yes.
And some of your interaction with the company on that. Can you just walk through that a little bit with what you were concerned about, what you found out, why you're comfortable with it, and even remind me what the D2 factor is. Is that our allocation factor?
Yes, that's the factor that they use to allocate transmission costs between the states. And so basically, they're still using the factor that was authorized them as part of the 2008 rate case that they had. And so I asked them what an updated factor would look like. And so then they reported what was in their annual report for 2015. And even though it would be lower as a result of their Minnesota rate case, that isn't in effect yet. But you can see it kind of bounces around a little bit so from year to year. So I think we're still in good alignment there by staying with the D2 factor that they put in their original case.
So if I'm reading your memo correctly, the D2 factor that would result from the company's pending Minnesota rate case, if approved, would be 40.034% for North Dakota customers?
Yes.
So it would be less than it currently is?
That's correct. But we don't even know if that, Minnesota could come back and state that it needs to be something else. That okay.
So that's what the company thinks it should be, 40.034%.
Well, that's based upon a rate case, you know, just what they filed in the rate case. So that's not an approved factor.
No, but it's if they filed it, it must be what they think is appropriate.
For a particular year in time. Which would, what is your test year on the case that's pending in Minnesota?
This is P5. Our test year was a forecast 2016. So that allocation factor is based on a forecast and not based on actual. We won't have actual, of course, till after the end of 2016.
So the factors are set in the rate case. Why do they vary every year? I mean, until you have a new rate case, you don't change the allocation factors without a rate case.
Chair Fedorchak, we typically don't change it without a rate case in any of our states with where we have riders, because the logic is that it's been those factors have been vetted and by each of the jurisdictions, and they know what goes into them, and they're comfortable with them, and they're part of the order. Although the commission does have authority to change them if they desire, it's not written in stone that you can't that the commission couldn't change that allocation factor if they see a wide variation. Over the years, we've had the allocation factors have been ran above what was decided in the rate case for a number of years, and we've had a couple times I think where it's been slightly below. But we haven't changed that factor in the rider.
Okay. Thanks, Pete. And then when you have your, when you complete your rate case in Minnesota and say your allocation factor changes, how will you address that with us then?
I would assume we won't have an absolute answer from Minnesota until sometime next summer. We'll probably address it in our next September 1 filing.
All right. So if they change it, you're going to be left with some costs uncovered if there's a gap between what they approved for Minnesota and what we've got. So you'll address that in a what filing?
In our next TCR filing, which would be September 1st, Chair Fedorchak.
And is this only for your transmission? Isn't this your allocation factor for all your costs?
There's other factors that we use for our environmental cost recovery rider and a different factor for our renewable rider. Those will all get calculated in a Minnesota case. As I said, typically we use factors that are determined in the individual jurisdictions.
Okay. Well, I don't understand this as well as I do for Excel because we've never had a rate case with you guys. So this is a little confusing to me, but.
Right.
Before you move on from that last statement about that you do them within individual jurisdictions, so they don't necessarily add up to one.
That's very possible. Yes, you're correct, Commissioner Crispin. Chair Fedorchak, if I may, to clarify your request for more information, Mr. Wires commented that the system design is a spoke and hub system, and if I'm understanding correctly, the spokes, if somebody builds a wind farm, the spoke that goes to the quote backbone, any improvements to that part of the system are charged to the developer of the wind farm. I don't know if that's correct, Mr. Wires.
Yeah. So the extent that spoke is essentially a dedicated facility for that generator. Yes, it's paid for by the generator. In fact, under the MISO tariff, 115 and 230 kV upgrades are all paid for by the generator as well. And then once we get to 345, there's a 10% allocation of those costs to the rest of MISO, with the 90% balance being assigned to the generator. So largely these costs are assigned to the generator.
So, Jason, Jerry, Leon here again. That changed, right? I mean, it used to be different. And then we had that all changed back in, I think, in the late 2000s.
Correct. Yeah, we had, in fact, you may recall, the quote-unquote otter tail issue that became front and center within MISO in the late 2000s, where we used to have a 50-50 cost allocation between the generators and the transmission owners. And it came to light for otter tail that the transmission investments we were being asked to invest in as a result of these generators were being done for the benefit of ratepayers outside of otter tail. So why should our ratepayers be burdened with these costs for these third-party generators that weren't necessarily serving otter tail load, but more or less serving MISO load? As a result of those discussions in the late 2000s, that's when we've seen that large change in the cost allocation, which now essentially assigns 100% of those upgrades to the generators for 115 and 230, and then 90% for 345 kV upgrades.
So Jason, on your slide 7, you've got the Rugby Wind interconnection listed in your projects.
You're talking about line 3?
Yep. Would that have been before the change?
Yes, this was representative of 50% of the total network upgrade cost for that Rugby Wind project.
It used to be billed, there was a split, a 50-50 split between the developer and the otter tail, and that's what happened in this Rugby Wind here. And you notice that's the only one that's in that slide for a wind interconnection. And that was one of the earlier projects. It took a couple years to get it up and running.
Yeah. So does that answer your question, or do you
sure.
still want... Okay, so you're good on that?
On the question. Well, I'd still be interested in what Brian puts together.
Okay. All right. So you guys hear that? Brian still is on the hook for further information.
Yes, I understand. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions?
I don't have any other questions of the company or of you, Sarah.
Neither. Thank you.
All right, Randy, nothing? Okay. Well, Otter Tail, I think that concludes the informal for today. So we'll... take this all under advisement, and I think we need to make a decision fairly soon on this. So we'll get that information back from Brian and finish our work.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.